Welcome to MGO Podcast 12.4B. This is the defensive and special teams half of our position-by-position Michigan preview. You want to listen to about the linebacker segment, probably. All right, we are back with the second half of our three-part podcast series. That's Michigan's preview.
You're getting 150% of the podcast here at MGO Blog.
It's like The Hobbit, but doesn't get as boring.
It's a Blake Corum amount of podcast work we put in. Showing up at 10 in the morning, keep talking about things.
I was wondering if you were going to be honest about the start time.
Rolling in, doing talky stuff. Anyway, Michigan's defense returns some very appealing pieces, lost a couple of big-time guys, and also had a major COVID departure when Ambry Thomas decided he would opt out and enter early. But we're going to start with the defensive line, where Michigan probably has the best set of defensive ends in the Big Ten. Quiddy Pay and Aiden Hutchinson, both guys should be drafted by the NFL if Hutchinson decides to go early. And Pay in particular is getting a level of hype that I frankly did not expect going into this season.
Yeah, he is getting the Bruce Feldman Freaks of the Year kind of hype. He was number one on that list, I think. And it puts up some, you know, in particular because he's put up apparently some pretty absurd agility drill times, which normally translates to a really good edge rusher, a guy who can bend around the corner. We haven't seen that from Quiddy Pay in the way we saw that from, like, say, Josh Uche.
Yeah.
Well, don't forget, Quiddy is the guy who came in to replace Gary for a pretty sizable chunk of 2018, and I don't think there was any drop-off in our charting.
Not in terms of run defense. So he came in against Wisconsin and actually did a really good job of controlling his guy and disrupting their power stuff. But he was not much of a rusher then. And honestly, like, I haven't seen him be much of an individualistic rusher since. So, like, Michigan did a ton of work last year with stunts. And Pay was very good at that. And Hutchinson was very good at that. Because when they're driving a guy, they move them because they're both big, powerful people. And if they're a looper and they get, like, a guard popping off someone else and they're able to attack half a man, they can drive through that guy and do something productive. But just in terms of straight up Uche, Chase Winovich, bend around the corner and get a sack from the blind side, haven't really seen that be part of his game yet.
It does seem like it's at least in the physical package, though. But yeah, to that point, like, most of the hype for Pay seems to be coming from outside the program among NFL types who have seen the combine numbers and like his technique on tape. Most of the buzz from inside the program seems to be that Hutchinson is the guy with the bigger sack upside.
Yeah, I mean, we should be clear that, like, last year, Don Brown went into the season saying, like, Quiddy Pay is the best technical football player in America. Like, mm-hmm. Don Brown loves Quiddy Pay. It's the quotes about him are the "I kiss you on the mouth" sort of quotes that Don Brown occasionally dispenses. So it's not like he's not getting an appropriate amount of hype, but you are right that it does feel like the people, if there's going to be a blow-up All-American-type defensive end for Michigan, it's probably Hutchinson.
Yeah, I mean, keep in mind, both of these guys, it was hard to see them coming around the edge that much last year because they weren't getting to play the edge very much last year. Like, they had Josh Uche, and they also, they needed these guys to play B-gaps all the time because their tackles just couldn't handle it, especially once they were, you know, down Kemp and just, you know, throwing walk-ons who were previously at offensive lineup.
Well, thankfully, that'll no longer be a problem.
No, but that's actually an excellent point, Seth, is that the way that Michigan coped with their defensive tackle problems was to have their defensive ends squeeze in, spill everything, and that naturally kind of spilled over into the pass rush as well. Should note that both Pay and Hutchinson were excellent at this. They closed a lot of really big gaps. They did heroic work to staunch some of the major issues Michigan had with their defensive tackles last year. You know, and if they don't have to reprise that this year, you could see some more upside on the outside. That if is kind of a major if, though.
It looms.
Until Ambry Thomas left, that was the big if of the season, right?
Right. So I guess we should talk about that. Michigan returns Carlo Kemp, who had a human junior year at nose tackle,
which is not his natural position.
No, and he was Michigan's best defensive tackle because he was Michigan's only defensive tackle. They played Ben Mason there. They moved Jess Spate, who's a walk-on that Seth previously referenced, who was the scout team player of the year 2 years ago. As an offensive lineman, he started against Alabama. They threw Jeter out there for the first time against Wisconsin, and he got crushed. They just had nobody there. And you're hoping this year that you have a couple more veteran players. You have a couple guys coming off freshman years. And you have Jeter, who is the starting nose tackle, maybe?
Yeah. And that's the hype before they put on pads. But I think that's also a motivation for Hinton to get into the position where he's. Yeah, because they need that kind of shine this year.
They do.
And I'm sure that they want to get him feeling like he has to earn it and that he has to lead the interior defensive line for the next few years.
And, Hinton was a guy who was a five-star in the final reckoning, I think, to at least one of the sites and close on another one. He goes to the UA game. People think he's a defensive end, so he's dropped over the course of the recruiting cycle. He moves inside the tackle. He does really well there. They move him back up. And then he has the indifferent freshman year that all defensive tackles have. And now is go time. This is, you got to step up. You got to fulfill your destiny now. Now.
Yeah. I have an upcoming article on this, but you look at defensive tackles past, true freshmen are almost never effective, except for once in a while you bring that guy out and he's got a great first step or something.
Right.
But defensive tackle is a position where you have to learn all the myriad things that offensive linemen are going to do to you and all the different directions that plays can come to you. And that does not happen in high school. Nobody plays a schedule in high school that's going to show you what you're going to see on your first couple downs in college.
So completely understandable that Hinton had his moments of promise and moments of worry as a freshman. Doesn't necessarily reflect poorly on him going into this year, but Michigan really needs him to hit, and they need him to hit immediately.
And they, especially because his classmate Mozzie Smith has not really generated any hype yet.
We were excited that he got mentioned in a press conference where they mentioned everybody.
I think he's had some unavailability issues recently, so he's a guy who really could have used a spring practice. Obviously, a physical talent needs more time to develop, maybe had some conditioning issues. It's not good that he's kind of behind Spate probably on the depth chart. Just don't really know what to expect. And you were really hoping that he would be farther along right now.
Yeah, the good thing is that these things can change pretty quickly when you get into fall camp and the pads come on.
Yeah.
And guys have been not talked about for those unavailability things. Those are things that people tend to get dinged for maybe a little bit unfairly by football coaches. And then, once you show hey, I'm your best option here, then
I am here and I am a bear.
Yeah, that'll turn around. And with Smith, the big hope is, at least for me, is that he can absorb double teams and I think we've talked about this a little bit in the Slack chat, but if he's even just like Brian Monet in there.
God, I would kill for Brian Monet.
Yeah, just somebody who can absorb a couple blockers and not move. We've talked about how much Michigan had to alter their scheme last year to cover for the fact that they didn't really have a guy who could do that. So if either Hinton or Smith, or hopefully both, can at least just hold their ground against double teams, that that changes the outlook for the defense. But it's the big if.
And Jeter is a possibility here. So when he's been on the field, he's been very bad, but that's because he got most of his playing time against Wisconsin and Alabama. So as far as introductions for defensive ends moving into defensive tackle go, that's the worst-case scenario by some distance. And another year to refine his body, another year to refine his technique. He's huge now. I think he's pushing 320. Like, if you're just looking for a guy to sit down against a double team and keep your linebackers clean, he might be an option. He wasn't an option last year, but don't ever write off a defensive tackle. Just don't.
Yeah, that is a spot where guys can kind of just emerge in their final year or two on campus because they're finally, like, bull strong.
And yes, we need someone to be the Graham Brown, the Pete Vigneer of of defensive tackle.
And he's also not a guy that, like, the staff is not mentioning. This is the guy that the staff is talking about, like, first team. Yeah.
So,
I mean, that happened last year, and we all saw it, and that's kind of why I think that we all kind of want to skip past him.
Yeah.
And are hoping that there's other options. But, you know, it's certainly plausible that the guy the coaches are talking about most is the guy who's going to be pretty good.
Yeah, and this is a situation where someone's going to get talked up, and the talk might not mean a whole lot, but he is an option there. The final defensive tackle who we haven't mentioned who's getting talked up by the coaches is Julius Welshoff, the German underpass enthusiast who wants to have a real good time at 3-tech now. He's reputed up to 290. Always a guy who you put in the oven for 2 years and saw what you got out the other side, and what you have is a very big, athletic guy who nobody really knows if he can play yet, but is a guy who can at least provide some depth, and maybe if Michigan rolls a critical hit, they could get lucky and get a really solid 3-tech out of him this year.
Yeah, he seems like his upside would be at pass rusher, as a pass rusher, so maybe we see him in some third down packages getting rolled out at 3-tech where you have this enormous athletic guy who's he's probably a little bit more capable of either splitting through guys or maybe on those stunts tearing around the corner and finishing a play.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to see what he can bring. I'm not necessarily expecting a ton of production, but he's certainly an intriguing backup.
The ideal that guy can turn into, I'm not saying this is where his projection is, but like the Raekwon Williams is a Michigan State defensive tackle. They used him as a nose, obviously, but the length and the athleticism makes you really good at taking on zone blocks because there's just no way to get around that kind of guy. And if they have, you know, I don't know if Welshoff's the dude, but that is kind of the level of upside you could see from a player who comes in with that profile.
So, more numbers for Michigan this year. Last year, they didn't really have anybody other than Kemp. So, you saw a lot of 3-3-5, you saw a lot of desperation, and you saw Kemp stay on the field pretty much every snap. So, at the very least, they'll be able to rotate Kemp a little bit, keep him fresher, have some more options there. I think it's clearly one of the weak spots on the team, but I feel like improvement is likely just because they have more possibilities.
Yeah, hopefully none of these guys get COVID.
Gonna see 240-pound Chris Jenkins out there. We got a lot of slot receivers. Let's try one of them.
Michael Morris is on the roster. He might. I don't know. They're probably at walk-ons after the guys that we mentioned.
I mean, we did mention terrifying. Six guys, so
including a walk-on.
So it's like not desperate as long as a couple of these guys do come through. You know, you're probably about two scholarship guys light for my preferences, but it could work out decently well. I don't think it'll be as much of a disaster area as it was last year. We haven't mentioned any backups at defensive end. So Luigi Villain, I think he's going to be a redshirt junior.
I'm calling him a redshirt sophomore right now.
No, that's fair enough. So he had 2 years of injuries, and people were kind of worried about him long-term. He got healthy last year. He had a sack against Notre Dame. He had a couple other good plays in that game. He had 7 tackles spread across 7 games as a deep backup. And now Pay's hyping him up. He also says he's like my best friend. So whenever someone says he's my best friend and he's awesome, you're kind of like, all right, maybe turn the importance of this quote down a little bit.
The fact that he's still around, the fact that he's still around on this team, considering, you know, Michigan has quite a record of guys who aren't playing for medical reasons, of just medicaling them and moving on. And the fact that they kept him around, and, you know, that doesn't reflect well on Michigan, I would say, but it reflects well on Luigi Vallejo.
They've medicaled a couple guys. I wouldn't say it's an epidemic.
They medicaled St. Juiced.
That one, boy, that one looks terrible right now, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So Vallejo is a guy who might have a role on this team, because I think on passing downs, you're going to see one or both of the starting defensive ends move inside. So that kind of weak side end role on a passing down is open. And, you know, he came out of high school as a near five-star as a weak side end and might find a role on passing downs. And that would be a good step forward for him in preparation for probably being a starter next year.
And also plausibly, you know, available through 2022.
Yeah. And then there's the man with the butt.
Oh, I was going to mention David Ojabo first, because I think he's in a similar boat in terms of being able to get off the weak side.
Oh, yeah, sure. In that. We can talk Ojabo.
Yeah, they're using him at Sam officially right now, which is, you know, the same reason they had, you know, Frank Clark and Brendan Byer and all those guys at Sam for a year or two.
Yeah, but that's a guy who you can very easily move down to weak side end in a pass rush package. It's not like he's forgotten how to put his hand in the dirt.
Right.
And that's probably where you're going to use him. Or, you know, just as a stand-up rusher and some weird third down look, Oki look, something like that. But Ojabo's one of those guys who, you know, got unearthed by Don Brown, but seems to have a lot of athletic upside. And Steve Lorenz really likes it. And Lorenz has been pretty on point with his, like, guys who are going to rise.
Yeah. He was practicing his three-point stance in his little hotel room in Scotland while he was waiting to get released back to the United States for, I think, like 4 weeks.
Yeah, he did have a bit of a layover because of COVID, where he couldn't get back. But I don't think he missed any major practice time because of that.
He was out of the country for 4 months, and I think there's probably some conditioning and stuff that he needed. He also needed a spring. I feel like this is just going to be a mulligan year for him. If we get anything out of him this year, that's great. I'm not going to be too stressed if we don't.
I mean, our comp for him was always Tackle Charlton, and he's still very much on that track.
Yeah. All right, since we're talking about David Ojabo, I have to read a tweet from Scotland. Thankfully, in Scotland, we all trained in our youths for the upcoming winter of discontent by drinking alcohol in dark parks, hillsides, bushes, and lanes, age 13 to 18 in Baltic conditions. We didn't then know we were training, but now is the day, and now is the hour. This is...
Okay, now do it.
I can't do accents. I can't. I wish.
No, everyone can do one accent well. It's just every other accent you try to do sounds exactly like the one that you
have. A great Michigan accent.
Yeah. I can make up accents that don't sound like anything, but I can't just.
I got a lot of comments from my Bo impersonation.
Really?
Yeah, I did like a Bo impression at the beginning of the 1940 podcast last week.
One man is more important than the team, but he's got to be like, okay, I'm
that's
not
pretty
do
good
it again.
Yeah, let's talk about Taylor Upshaw, who now has a butt according to Don Brown, which puts him to 256 pounds on the roster, which is not enough to be an anchor end yet.
I enjoy that the implication was that his entire weight gain was,
well, you know, it's been a...
Or that he found a butt and, like, attached it on him, like, oh, that's what's
been
missing.
It's been like a butt-focused decade, I feel.
We do have a photo of him from last year where Don Brown's not wrong. Like, he was a really skinny, tush dude in his first season.
I think that's a first for the podcast, the phrase skinny, tush dude. Mm. Actually, I'm going to Google that to see if anyone else has ever said that.
It may be a nickname that we call my 3-year-old.
Oh, my God. About 291,000 results. Oh, wait. No results found. No, you're the first person to ever say that. All those results are for the phrase without quotes. No results found for skinny tush dude.
Well, he is the first, and he's going to be the best skinny tush dude, except he's got a butt now. I'm just trying to like stretch out the segment where we just discussed this one line from Don Brown.
It was the quote of the offseason.
Yeah.
But as a recruit, Michigan pretty much took a flyer on him. He has good bloodlines. His father played in the NFL. He hadn't played much football by the time he became a recruit. I think it was just two seasons. So obviously a piece of raw clay to work with. Probably don't want to see him on the field this year. Working towards being a potential starter next year would be great. So get some rotation time, do decently with it, you know, live to fight another day. The other guy who they've been talking up a little bit because of his weight gain is Gabe Newberg. Newberg was one of the lowest rated recruits in his recruiting class, a guy who, you know, upside as he bulks up into a Craig Rowe or a Ryan Van Bergen kind of 285-pound anchor who's technically sound, not that exciting as a rusher, probably not, you know, of much interest to the NFL, but is a solid college player. Seems like he's on that.
Surprised you didn't say Godin.
Well, Godin was a three tech, so I'm talking about an anchor end. So sounds like he's on that track. He's another guy who could get some rotation time this year and hopefully establish himself as an option going into next year.
Yeah, and then if you have to break glass on a freshman, I assume it would be Braden McGregor, who's basically Aiden Hutchinson.
Yeah, I mean, he's coming off a pretty major knee injury. So
that's true.
He talked about how he really wanted to play this year, and he was talking about playing Sam. So my interpretation of that is he would get in on passing downs as sort of a freelance rusher and not like be a Sam in a 3-3-5, like that's trying to be a real defense instead of a passing down defense.
That'd be more concerning.
But yeah, he's like, honestly, just get him on the field a little bit, work on his knee stability, get him back feeling comfortable, and try to Hutchinson him up as quickly as possible. But I'm not expecting a ton this year.
No, neither am I. Just very much an emergency option.
Yes.
Well, the guy that they're talking about in that position right now for like that extra edge rusher is Jalen Harrell, who's another true freshman, who I think we all expect to kind of grow into a defensive end eventually, but maybe more of a Tim Jamison kind of guy. Like, and again, throw that guy out off at outside linebacker, quote Sam, at the beginning, and just see if he's got pass rush and can bend, and that's an asset to have at least, even if he can't put his hand.
Yeah, he was explicitly referenced as a quote Uche by Steve Lorenz, and so that's what that position is now. It's the Uche spot.
It's the Uche.
They're going to try to get him to do that. He's probably at least a year away from having a thumbs up or a thumbs down about that possibility too. So that's the defensive line. They've got two great defensive ends, and that's a good spot to build from. You just really need to get one of those guys, maybe two of those guys at defensive tackle to click, and you're looking pretty decent. That's a big if, though. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, and talk about linebacker.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Here's a thing people say. Seth, tell me about your insurance.
I'm actually glad you asked me about that because I just changed my insurance and I'm really happy I did.
Let me guess. You use Phil Klein and Owen Rosen of the Phil Klein Insurance Group.
They are MGO blog readers and they don't advertise during football games.
And they've got a 5-star rating on anything you would care to see. Call Owen at 248-682-7445 or visit them online at philklineinsurance.com. Linebacker looks pretty good.
Yeah, feeling great about this, actually.
So you have Josh Ross, who missed most of last year with an injury, got a red shirt, comes back and moves back to the weak side linebacker spot that he split with Devin Gill 2 years ago. That was one of the more frustrating personnel decisions I've seen in a minute because they were playing the same spot, and I was grading out Josh Ross very well. PFS was grading out Josh Ross very well. Gill, not so much. I mean, he was middling. He wasn't terrible, but I think he was -4 in UFR for the year, and Ross was +33. And that's an all-conference level of play, and that's what PFF graded him out as well. The problem was when he moved to middle linebacker last year, you know, he got the Army game where everybody's trying to chop him all the time. Like, he had a couple other games where he just didn't play very well.
Wisconsin.
Yeah. Well,
big one.
I don't really know how to judge a linebacker in that context. I do feel like he got put in a lot of bad situations because of the defensive tackle situation. He did not handle those well.
We saw Cam McGrone handle those situations better.
So he moves to weak side where he was a plus performer 2 years ago. He's recovered from the injury. I think he played late last season, but they didn't want him to get above 4 games. So I feel like he's 100% full go, and you're hoping he can recapture that sophomore form. Even doing that would make him maybe a second team All Big Ten kind of player.
Yeah, I read Northwestern blogs just because I really like the Northwestern bloggers. But they've kind of had a thing going on for a while now where their middle linebackers are always like, one wild man and one kind of guy who's a stalwart who'll make the play at the end. And I think that is a good way to describe Michigan's two starters here. McGrone being your guy who's going to knife in and do some crazy stuff, and then Ross, who might be better at cleaning up than trying to initiate.
Yeah, it's they kind of had that dynamic a couple years ago, and I think they are going to try to recapture it because the wild man is certainly Cam McGrone, who replaced Ross after the injury and looked like pretty much you would expect a freshman superhero to look. It was like Devin Bush if Devin Bush wasn't perfectly sculpted from the head of Zeus.
We were missing the dreads, but it looked pretty similar.
Taller than Bush.
Devin Bush came onto the field and was immediately the smartest linebacker I had seen since David Harris. Truly incredible ability to identify things and get out of them and not make errors. And that was not the case for McGrone. You know, McGrone looked like a redshirt freshman for large periods of the year. But part of that was that he also looked like a near 5-star redshirt freshman where he was coming out of nowhere to blast Wisconsin quarterbacks and blitzing like Devin Bush and just looking like an all-purpose sower of mayhem. And a year on, a steady grip on the job, he's probably auditioning for the NFL. This feels like a breakout year where he's one of the best linebackers in the country.
Yeah, I had a bit going on last year where I kept on trying to, like, raise the comp to him. So I was like, okay, that kind of looked like Ian Gold, or there's a play that Larry Foote would have made. And just, I was trying to ramp up to Devin Bush, and he didn't even let me. He like, got to a point, I think, by the Michigan State game where someone was trying to edge him, and, like, he shot him a rocket the same way Bush did. And it's like, okay, now the whole fan base, I think Larry Foote actually even tweeted it, like, himself. He was like, that looks like Devin Bush out there. So
he just needs to cut down on the errors. I don't think he'll probably be at the Bush level, just because that's pretty hard to expect. But you know, he should be a playmaker who nears double-digit sacks.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the sack thing, and one of the things I really liked about McGrone is you don't always have guys who, when they have that level of athleticism and play with that kind of hair-on-fire style, they don't always finish plays. And with both Bush and McGrone, those guys finish the plays that they get out there to make. So both when McGrone is stretching out plays to the sideline, and it kind of reached a point last year where it was like, why would you even try to get around the edge against that guy?
You tried to edge so-and-so. How did that work out for you?
Yeah, and then also with his ability to fire through on blitzes, he just... when he gets to plays, he finishes them, and that's not something to necessarily take for granted.
I wanted to point out too that we've yet to mention that Michigan has two new staff members on defense. Replacing Chris Partridge and Anthony Campanile with Bob Shoup and Brian Jean-Marie. Sorry,
apparently it's Jean-Marie on that recently. That's what Jean-Marie? Sam said. So
not even using the French when we got it. All right, Brian Jean-Marie it is. Even though I don't know how to pronounce his dang name, I've been watching a lot of the defense that these guys work in, and both of them are very, very much from the zone blitz end of the spectrum, which Don Brown, he blitzes with his linebackers a lot, but he doesn't involve them. Yeah, it's not zone blitzing.
It's changing.
And I think that the way that these guys, that Brian Jean-Marie especially uses linebackers in his blitzes are things that we haven't even seen from Don Brown yet. And that if Michigan's going to be getting pressure, they don't have an Uche this year, but I think they could be getting a lot more pressure from the linebackers based off of some of the games that these new coaches are going to want to play.
There's very little depth behind the two starters at inside linebacker. They have redshirt freshman Charles Thomas, and then they have a trio of true freshmen. Khalil Mullings is a guy who's a super athlete, but coming out of New England, so probably needs a year. Cornell Wheeler is probably the Desmond Morgan of the group. Very smart, very heady, knows exactly what he's doing, especially in Michigan's defense, because he's from West Bloomfield, which runs Michigan's defense. Then you have, who's the third one? Nick Highhill Green,
yeah. Like the freshmen are actually the guys, Hill Green being the one getting the most time, but also Mullings is starting to pop too.
And so you're going to have to rotate those guys a little bit. I mean, you don't have to, because Don Brown has been weirdly averse to rotating his inside linebackers, even deep into blowouts. Like Bush was still out there. Glasgow was still out there. They barely came off the field. So you may or may not see some of these guys, but Michigan has brought in three linebackers in this class. It was four until Savage transferred, and they're bringing four in the next class. So I think you're gonna see a lot of competition there in a couple years, but getting past the starters right now would be uncomfortable.
I kind of think that, I know we haven't talked about Viper yet, but Michael Barrett, who leads at Viper, is going to get he's probably their number three inside linebacker right now.
That was my assumption.
Let's talk
as well
about Michael Barrett. Michael Barrett is probably going to start at Viper. He was a standout in the late portions of last year's spring game. It was mostly walk-ons, but he was out there, and when he hit someone, they went down. He's a thumper. Great athlete, high school quarterback who looked for all the world like a guy who could be a D1 running back.
Intriguing punt protector.
Yes. I mean, he had the throw
and punt
receiver. He had the throw out to Dexon Hill against Army, which he's referencing,
which was a depressingly critical play in that game.
Yes, but all the same, worked out. And a guy who I think is a pretty good bet to replace most of what Kalik Hudson offered. And one thing that Kalik was not good at was dropping back and operating as an actual outside linebacker in a 4-3 even. And as you guys mentioned, I think that's something that Barrett is much more likely to be able to hack and could give the defense more flexibility.
I mean, he's actually practiced it inside linebacker, which was not a thing that Kalik Hudson ever did.
Well, I mean, Glasgow is this guy who made a similar move, right? He was a Viper for a couple years, and then he moved to weak side linebacker, gets drafted. So that's definitely on the table. But as a Viper, you know, I think you're looking at him as a guy who's going to be very solid on the edge, going to be very solid in underneath zones. May not be ideal for chasing guys down the seam just because he's a little bit bigger. He might not be as able to mirror a tight end when they go deep, but I think he's going to bring a lot to the table. And you do have an interesting option when you're facing a tight end who might be a threat downfield. Is you have Anthony Solomon, who's a sophomore, pretty much the most annoying burn red shirt from last year. But he's a guy who's much more on the safety end of Viper and reputed to be one of the best coverage linebackers in the country last year. Was 190 pounds, so people didn't know what to do with him. So he starts off as a pretty high four-star and slides over the course of the cycle because, you know, he's a guy who's 190-pound outside linebacker. He's a tweener, but he's not a tweener at Michigan. He's a Viper. So he's another guy who I think would bring something to the table, and you might actually see a little bit of rotation there, which has not been the case previously.
Yeah, and he's still in safety range. Some of what Kalik would do is rotate it back into deep safety or strong safety all the time. And if you want to have a guy who can do that, Solomon probably can fill that role. And also, like I brought up the Gene Mary before, that like he uses a lot of light outside linebackers in his 3-3-5 sets. So some of those ideas too, those double Viper sets, especially on passing downs, Solomon seems like a guy who's going to be on the field a whole bunch, even if he doesn't have, like, you know, a starting position.
Yeah, and then you have Joey Velasquez as a third-string Viper. We haven't really heard much about him, probably another year waiting for him. And then the other guy who's actually getting some talk is Ben Van Sumeren, who spent last year as sort of a H-back tight end and has been moved to Sam. And people are talking like he's actually going to play, like he's taken the reins there and he's the undisputed starter at Sam. What that means, I don't know. Cause
I assume that means he has established himself in the Noah Furbush
role. Yeah. Which isn't the worst thing in the world, especially when you have Cam McGrone. Like, that sort of human snowplow could be useful from time to time. I mean, the problem with that was that once Michigan saw it and Furbush wasn't able to do other stuff, it became pretty predictable. So what else can Van Sumeren do on defense that makes his presence not a dead giveaway? I don't know yet.
But at least, you know, Furbush, I think, had a little bit more limited of an athletic profile. So hopefully Van Sumeren can be a little bit more versatile in what he does. I also expect that to be a pretty... that's probably not going to be Michigan's base, I'll put it that way. So
no.
We're probably not talking about a large number of snaps.
But there is the... like, using him as an emergency defensive tackle who happens to start from 3 or 4 yards deep is disturbingly on the table, right? Like, it's a possibility.
It certainly is.
If you're going to have a defensive fullback, might as well have a literal fullback do it.
Yeah, and that's one thing that will be interesting to see. Like, Ben Mason, well, I guess he doesn't have to graduate this year. Ooh, that's a point.
More Ben Mason!
But like, if you are actually going to have a fullback type in the offense, then Van Sumeren seems like he would be an option there and might move back. But that's so if they either they don't value that position, which is a possibility, or Van Sumeren actually is impressing at that spot and might be a contributor. We'll see.
I mean, Wisconsin's been able to take Van Sumerens and turn them into like borderline or even in the NFL outside linebackers. Yeah. Again and again. So, I mean, that role, there is a type there. And, you know, because Noah Furbush is the only one of recent memory, that's the only one that we talk about. But if you go back to the 1990s Michigan, you know, we always had guys like that.
Yeah. Well, and the other guys being talked about at Sam are all just being told that they can be passing down rushers, right? Just Ojabo, McGregor, yeah.
Yeah, I'm expecting both of them to take that Frank Clark / Brennan Breyer a memorial year at Sam before moving down to defensive end, just kind of as pass rusher specialists right at this point. In McGregor's case, that knee injury he suffered was pretty bad, so I'm kind of expecting him. He would have taken a red shirt if anyone got red shirts this year, but I'm not really expecting to see him much this year.
All right, we're going to take a break, come back, and talk about the secondary.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
$110,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan, dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homeshore Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homeshorelending.com. That's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Hey, some people are made of plastic. We'll be right back.
interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Hi, this is Seth of the Future. Just a quick note before you head into this section. This podcast was recorded on Monday, October 12th, and you are listening to it probably on October 14th. In the interim, Sammy Faustin was moved to cornerback, and Dax Hill is once again a safety and nickel exclusively. We did not know that when we discussed it, so apologies. Things can change.
And the final area of the defense is, of course, the secondary, which took a major COVID hit when Ambry Thomas, Michigan's best cornerback and an NFL prospect, decided he would opt out of the season, leaves Michigan in a little bit of disarray to the point where we're talking about Dax Hill as a cornerback now, which is a development.
Less terrified of Dax Hill at cornerback and more terrified about what that means for the cornerbacks.
That's a fair statement, I think.
Yeah, but I don't necessarily disagree. I do feel like, you know, you had that Miles Spider Sims, Jemon Green, German Green, Faustin class, and it doesn't really seem like it's working out, any of those guys.
Well,
and
Faustin is apparently maybe starting at safety if Dax Hill moves down.
Yeah, so like he's a guy who is an athlete who you needed to develop. He was kind of a deep sleeper, but you know, they had the two touted guys in that class were Sims, who transferred after a year, and Green, who's still fighting for a starting spot. There have been some discussions that he was the leader there, but if he was a strong leader, you wouldn't be talking about Dax Hill at safety. So, a little bit.
Yeah, there's a sense that cornerbacks will come, will show early, that like there's not a whole lot more than their talent that needs to be on the field in order to get on the field. And like last year was certainly a year you would expect anyone who could play last year to be on the field. There is some precedent in Michigan history for guys to take a little while, especially with larger cornerbacks. Morgan Trent, obviously they moved him from receiver, but JT Floyd took a long time before he was effective. Jeremy LeSueur, he took a while before, you know, he could get on the field, and he was actually pretty decent at the end. Jeremy Clark, you know, is an extreme example of that, where, like, you know, he was a safety.
Clark was the first name that inspired any confidence to me.
Zaya Combs, who was actually good until he got injured.
LeSueur was a second-round NFL draft pick. So
yeah, LeSueur was decent.
Yeah.
But it's been a while. That was part of the problem there.
Well, and then Brandon Watson, too, is like a, you know, the same kind of story.
I'd put Channing Stribling in the same boat. You know, I think Stribling was much more effective later in his career.
So he was on the field as a freshman. That's the difference. Like, the coaches trusted him to be on the field as a freshman.
For a large portion of the last 6 years, not being on the field was explicable because you had Jordan Lewis and David Long. And I mean, they had a real run here. And then last year, you get Vincent Gray kind of getting all the third cornerback snaps. And he's an interesting case because PFF put out one of their tweets about Michigan stuff, and it was like, these are the top five defensive backs in the last 8 years in terms of percentage of catches made when they're targeted, and it's all Michigan players. It's David Long twice, it's Jordan Lewis, it's Stribling's on there, and then it's Vincent Gray. And
right,
this feels not at all related to his play on the field. He was okay, but there was a big gap between his ability to remain in contact with receivers and Ambry Thomas. It's one of those things where, could he improve on it? Probably, but is he going to improve enough to like keep Michigan's streak of NFL corners going? Right now, I'd say probably not.
No, he's kind of your Brandon Watson guy, who, if that's your third dude, then like you've got a dude, right? And they can hide him from Ohio State receivers if you...
But they didn't hide Brandon Watson.
Yeah, I was about to say, that was the worst example you could have used.
I don't know why they did it, though. That made no sense to us, right? They had David Long and LeVert Hill at that time, and that still doesn't make any sense. But they could have. They could have done so.
You're doing a terrible job of reassuring people about anything in this segment. this is like...
You're not giving me much to work with here, okay?
Well, I'm trying to be mildly optimistic.
He's a good third banana. You don't want him to be your number one.
Well, I mean, I think the final disposition of Gray is yet to be determined. But I would say that
it's true.
He's probably trending more towards the Stribling kind of player. I mean, Stribling was a fine college player who wasn't of much interest to the NFL. And that's, I think, acceptable at one corner spot. And then you just need anyone to emerge. You know, we've been hearing about DJ Turner. Haven't heard anything about Jalen Perry really since he enrolled. And then people are talking up Green a little bit. You know, they have Andre Seldon and Darian Green Warren in this class. They have some options for guys who could emerge, but this is
the freshmen may be the ones that I'm most hopeful for, just because they at least have had the least amount of opportunity to not break through.
Well, Turner was the one I was really hoping for because he had a good reason. First of all, Michigan really recruited him like he was a high four star. Like they thought the way they recruited him was like he was going to be the next Jordan Lewis. And then he was hurt last year. So like he couldn't even get on the field and we couldn't really see what he was. That's a good excuse for not playing his freshman year, especially because it sounded like they actually did want to use him last year. That he got passed by Jamon Green might be good news for Jamon, but probably not, right? Probably just
well, it's good news for
Turner's
Jamon.
Not really there.
Might not be good news for
right
Michigan's defense.
Yeah.
And Jamon's another guy that like they went after hard, right? Like I know Michigan and Texas were the only schools that were really interested, but Michigan was really interested.
I don't think Texas' interest was really very high. They definitely weren't going to take his brother as a package deal, and that's what Michigan
did. So, but Michigan going after his brother as a package tells you that Michigan really thought they had an athlete in this guy. And Don Brown has done that many times before. Just look at the number of guys from BC who are in the NFL today. It were just athletes that Brown found. So like it's possible that these guys are athletes that took a little while to train up or something, or maybe just put some weight on them, right? Because like Jamon, I think, came in at 181 or something, which was, for a guy who's 6'1", that's pretty rail thin.
I mean, there's some possibilities someone will bust through, but then they keep talking about Dax Hill as a cornerback, and then...
Right. Yeah, I mean, that was at least before, you know, you get Seldon in there as a freshman at nickel, which maybe, like, my main reason for optimism is if Seldon locks down the nickel spot and shows, like, his kind of just, you know, Will Likely type coverage ability that he showed all throughout his senior year and in the All-American game. That at least means you have a pile of bodies to throw at that second corner spot, and then the rest you can cover with safeties and Dax Hill, wherever you decide to use
him. And
Jamon
might have been another one of those guys that like was not available, might have been dinged up or something like that this fall. So like when you're not playing, you're not being talked about.
Yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of uncertainty there, and I don't think that we're going to get a whole lot of clarity until a few games pass. It was really nice. You know, they had Jordan Lewis, they had Long, they had LaVert Hill all in a row, and then they had Ambry. It was a really, really nice to have that 6-year period.
I hate to say it, but with Rashad Bateman on the schedule in week one, we might get clarity pretty early.
Well, Rashad Bateman can torch Michigan, and that's not the clarity I'm looking for. I'm looking for like...
That's fair.
Are these guys all right? Can they do anything?
Yeah, I mean, Rashad Bateman is one. Michigan doesn't really face another main huge receiver until Ohio State's guys. And by Ohio State's guys, you're going to need speed.
Let's just not talk about that game. Let's talk about the rest of the games.
But for every other game, like, okay, what do you need for the other games?
I need Lombardi to be held under 6 yards an attempt. Can these guys do that?
There's where Michigan's cornerback went, Julian Barnett. If that guy had come here, like we're fine.
I know. That's exactly what I said when he didn't come to Michigan. I was like, that's the guy who they always got over the past half decade. At safety, you've got Brad Hawkins returning. Hawkins graded out really well at Pro Football Focus, less so in my grading. Safety grading is always a difficult enterprise because you mostly see them when they screw up or someone else is screwed up. But, you know, not a ton of long speed, hasn't really been a playmaker, very solid run defender. You know, he's not quite Jared Wilson in terms of boring safety because Jared Wilson is still in the NFL, and I don't really know if that's a realistic goal.
Got a pick yesterday.
He did.
Yep.
I mean, probably more like Tyree Kennell,
yeah,
right?
A senior safety, pretty experienced, isn't going to be busting all kinds of stuff. Last year, they used him as, like, the safety who came down into the box for crossing routes. That went pretty well for him. That was a good role for him. you know, using him as a deep half kind of guy is something that you're going to get roped into every once in a while when motion messes with you or whatever. But you know, he's a guy who had some mental errors last year. I think the first touchdown against the KJ Hamler touchdown against Penn State.
Oh, God,
where
that, yeah.
It was supposed to be a two deep, but there was one guy deep. So there were some issues there as he adapted to a new role. But I think that he'll be relatively mistake-free and you know, decent. And then the other spot is either going to be Dax Hill, who we're all super excited about, or I think it's safe to say someone who we're not super excited about.
Yeah, someone we're hoping is just as not there as possible, I guess.
I mean, Sammy Faustin is plausible because safeties do take a little bit longer than cornerbacks to see the field and be ready to, you know, to bust out. Like, even Dax Hill last year had his mental errors that once in a while he could fix because he was Superman, but couldn't fix entirely.
And he also just didn't play much.
Yeah. But, like, that's the thing. Faustin is a third-year player, and he was coming in raw. So it's plausible that they got something with that guy.
Yeah.
And Makari Page, like, if you're going to have a freshman come into your program, that's the exact, you know, he's a Jared Wilson-level ability with the, you know, he's been in that defense for years because he played at West Bloomfield, and he was calling the secondary at West Bloomfield. So he could, like, walk right in and play.
Yeah, and he's getting the kind of early talk that is very encouraging long-term. Putting a true freshman safety out there, even one experienced in the defense, would be terrifying, I guess. Is the
word. That was the word.
I mean,
it's plausible you could get a Jared Wilson sophomore year just because he's so much further ahead than the normal freshman.
Yeah, and the other guy who stands out as a potential finger in the dike is not R.J. Moten.
Jordan Morant.
Jordan Morant.
I'm going to get those two confused their entire careers.
Yes, I've had to fix a couple. It's just going to happen. But,
yeah.
But Morant stood out as a guy when I did his recruiting profile. He's a guy who's ready to come up and tackle in the Big Ten immediately. Not a shoulder block kind of guy. A guy who will wrap up and secure. And that's obviously a big step towards being a boring safety. And that's the goal for that spot this year, right? No, we don't need playmakers. Just don't screw it up. So he's an option. You got, you know, German Green. Nobody's talked about him very much. And then last year you had a couple of walk-ons who were kind of maybe on the two deep. It was hard to tell sometimes, but I think Hunter Reynolds is the guy who, if there is a walk-on getting rotation snaps, that would be him. And I don't know what to expect from that, but you could make it work in some, for some definition of work. Probably not like hold Ohio State to 6 points work, but like survive, it, you know.
The teams that make that kind of defense work are the ones who are really committed to something.
Yeah.
And the thing that concerns me about Michigan secondary is this safety group is not committed
to
anything.
Yeah, so like
they were a man-to-man team with Dax Hill until recently, right?
Well, I mean, they've been putting a lot more zone stuff in the defense. Like, people talk about Don Brown exclusively going man-to-man, and we're kind of in this phase where people are still talking about John Beilein running a 1-3-1 when he hasn't done that. And it's not quite as severe because Michigan, of course, does run a lot of man-to-man, but they're not man-to-man exclusive. They do a lot more stuff with two high safeties. They had to do that to shut down the crossing routes. And the kind of problem is that it feels like Michigan does one thing, it gets downloaded, and then they change, but they're always a little bit behind. So you mentioned that touchdown against Alabama. Well, that touchdown against Alabama happened almost entirely because Michigan was running the same anti-crossing routes defense. So Hawkins stepped up because he saw a crossing route, and you had Jerry Jeudy in a ton of space against one safety, and that didn't work out. So,
well, and it's also kind of clear what Michigan is going to run because, you know, in man, you end up in a lot more single high looks. And then obviously when you're running that two trap coverage, you end up running more two high safeties. And just from that pre-snap look, teams can kind of get what you're running. And, you know, like, one of the reasons Ohio State's defense has been relatively successful recently is they run man and then cover three instead of cover two. And that way you're able to leave that single high safety back there and teams don't know whether you're running man or zone. With Don Brown's defense right now, there isn't that level of disguise, or if you're trying to disguise it, you're then asking a safety to haul ass back into a deep half from creeping up towards
which
the
is something and- Dax Hill could do.
Right.
It's true.
And that's one of the things that is a little disappointing about the fact that they're talking about him at corners. He's a guy who, if he's at safety, you can do all kinds of stuff. And you can disguise your coverages. You can blitz with him. You can have him play straight up on a slot receiver so you don't have to give up slants. And then you can blitz your linebackers. He's just an incredibly useful piece to have on your defense if he's a safety. Now, he can be a good corner. I have no doubt about that. But in terms of maximum impact for the good for Michigan, as a box safety for Michigan.
No, this is why I think Andre Seldon coming through might be like the most important thing for Michigan's defense other than DTs emerging.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, best case scenario, you get, it doesn't have to be Seldon, but it has to be someone steps up and is Vincent Gray last year at cornerback, and then you can run the games with Hill and hopefully make up for the fact that your cornerbacks aren't at the standard they've been over the past half decade because you have so much more ability to hide what you're doing.
And they have to stay healthy during a pandemic.
You know, that's another thing. It's just, at some point, Michigan's going to have several guys out for a game and they might lose that game and you're just going to be like, eh, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I want to get back to this, the idea that, like, we don't have a thing. Like, Michigan does use their zone coverages a lot. And Don Brown has his, like, doubles coverage that he likes to use on passing downs. But, like, if they you don't have something you hang your hat on, like, Ohio State, the reason they can run that so well is they have three cornerbacks on the field every single play and one deep safety. And they recruit to that, and they practice that, and those guys have been in the program a couple years before they run it. At Iowa, or Michigan State, they run these cover two or and quarters trap coverages that are great because they practice it so often. And I mean, like, if Michigan was going into the season saying, look, our guys are Hunter Reynolds and Brad Hawkins and we're going to be a cover two team this year, I almost feel more comfortable than if we're, like, you know, changing things up a couple weeks before the season because we don't have a cornerback.
Yeah, I mean, I hear that also. I mean, it's not like the zone coverages aren't already in Don Brown's playbook. And, like, you're right that Ohio State does one particular thing, but the way they get away with that is that they recruit five stars, so, like...
Yeah, Ohio State's a bad example.
That's the only way you can run that type of
like
system.
You see...
Otherwise you get...
You see coaches popping up on Twitter just talking about how the Ohio State defensive system is basically four plays. It's like, it's not...
The Ohio State defensive system is we are better than you man for man, and we're going to prove it on every down.
Well, they have all the Dax Hills.
That's actually a little bit closer to what Brown is accused of. But it was actually true, I think, going into the Ohio State game 2 years ago. But at the same time, they're also the number one defense in the country in S&P Plus. It's just I've mentioned this before, but I think it's really hard to prepare for disaster when you have been playing so well. So... Yeah, and that game is a sea change in recent Michigan football history, and we're still kind of living in the fallout from that. And Don Brown's trying to find a way to make it work.
an almost comforting thing is that when you look across college football this year, even at like Alabama, the defense and tackling has been down across the country. Like, Vegas can't set the over-under high enough. And so, you know, if there's sort of a like leveling out across the country in terms of defensive quality, just because the lack of preparation really hurts defense's ability to just even like make plays in space and tackle, then I mean, Bama just got torched by Ole Miss.
And Georgia, you know, gave up a gazillion points to A&M. And there's a lot of bad defense going around out there.
I think you mean Florida.
Florida.
Yeah, I was about to say that Georgia A&M game was... Georgia's defense should not be used as an example.
I meant Florida. I completely meant Florida.
All right, I think we've depressed the listeners enough about the state of the secondary. Let's take a break, come back. We have our hot take, and we're going to talk some special teams.
Is your online store sluggish, outdated, underperforming? You may be suffering from chronic crappy website disorder. One in three online stores built by your brother's friend's nephew currently suffers from chronic crappy website. But now, there's hope. Introducing Human Element. Huel has helped hundreds suffering from CCW to turn their online stores around, creating fast, secure, and engaging online experiences that turn visitors into customers and put products back at the top of their search engine game.
Before Huel, I had abandoned carts, browser errors, and poorly animated GIFs. Now, with Huel, I can focus on what I'm actually good at, running my business.
Jeffrey, would you be a deer and pull the Ferrari around?
Side effects may include increased traffic, customer conversions, better ROI, compliments, elation, and early retirement. Why live with the disappointment of chronic crappy website disorder? Speak to your Human Element consultant today to see if Huel is right for you.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
During these challenging times, it is important to have a Michigan man in your corner. If you or someone in your life has questions, concerns, or just want to discuss your legal rights, give attorney Jonathan Paul a call at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com. John asks you all to be safe. We're going to get through this together. And as always, go blue.
Win or lose this season, stop into Information Entropy and make sure that you have a good time on game day. First-time customers can light up a free pre-roll and enjoy the quality cannabis products that this shop has to offer. Located 2 miles away from the Big House and accessible to ages 21+, find Information Entropy at 1115 Broadway, across from the Kellogg Eye Center off Plymouth Road. They don't want to hear the words go green over there, but they are happy to help you smoke it. Check them out at Information Entropy.
I need a take so hot it could be my opinion about certain children's books.
I got a lot of hot takes about children's books, but you guys don't want to hear them.
Oh, we all do. We all do. I especially the three that I've read nonstop for the last basically all of COVID.
Really? We don't do that. Yeah. He has a big bookshelf with books, and then when we read one, we put it on top of his dresser, so we always cycle through most of the books.
No, my 3-year-old will freak out if he can't find one of them. I've tried that, but then he will go and find it, and then he will get upset if we don't read Pinkalicious or
Pinkalicious.
Remember when we were like,
yes, Brian, Pinkalicious.
Remember when we were like, no one wants to hear about this.
I don't want to,
because I think I represent the stereotype or the typical listener at this point.
I bet we got
I
gotta tell you, this is a dad podcast now. Ace, in terms of listeners, we're no longer getting the cool guys with nice hats like Jamiroquai. He's not listening to our podcast anymore. I know that's devastating.
It legitimately
remember
is.
That? That guy had a big hat.
And in a room that pooped.
Seth, give me your hottest take.
Ben Mason should have been the cover of Hail to the Victors all along.
It's not really about the defense.
I know. No. I failed. Everything I had about the defense was so depressing and already covered in the secondary, so.
So that's the hot.
I just went back to my original one that I'd written down. My hot take is Ben Mason should be the cover of Hail to the Victors.
If you put...
And we're morons for thinking otherwise.
12.2 yards an attempt. Nobody could have predicted that Nico Collins would decide to come back when he didn't have to and then decide to not come back. So that's my situation. Ace, I need your hottest take.
Well, I guess it's easy to follow up, but... Julius Welshoff records 5 sacks as a nickel defensive line. I'm in on the juice train.
Well, Ace, my hot take is Julius Welshoff is going to emerge into a starter at 3-tech.
There we go. All right.
So we are both. I don't think anybody has been directly preempted on their hot take before, thus lessening the hotness of the takes.
Apparently, it's not that hot to be enchanted by Julius Welshoff's potential and, you know, underpass, overpass, whatever.
Underpass.
It will make for some a fun season with all the Germanness and the mogul skiing and like. Well, there's
he's not
going to
do any
reference.
Of that on the field. He's...
Yeah, I'm not sure how we're going to see that when he's out there playing.
He's not going to wickedly.
Unless they hold games in some woods.
No, we're
in which case we're he's
are,
in
are you doubting our ability to translate the game on the field to memes on the blog?
We'll have to come up with various German words that don't exist for
that just
things.
Made me realize that the J-U-J experience is no more and I'm very sorry.
We'll have to use some sort of authoritarian leader from Germany's past. Is
Ooh
that
boy.
A bad idea? Is that that's not
yeah.
that's a bad
There's
idea.
Your hot take, Brian. That's
I'm getting a sense that neither Seth nor Ace thinks that's a good idea.
Yeah.
All right, if you would like us to continue doing this extremely
it's a promo.
Order Fuego Box. They'll give you 3 hot sauces a month chosen for flavor, not merely heat. Go to fuegobox.com/mgoblog for $10 off your first month. Ace has disappeared.
All right, I'm back. My bed is right next to me, which is not helping the leg ability to fall out.
This is our special team segment for the umpteenth straight year. This seems like it's in pretty good hands. So both Jake Moody and Quinn Nordine return. No, neither of those guys has been absolutely perfect.
Yeah, occasionally wild hands.
Yeah.
But
you know, Nordine reemerged into the starter about halfway through last year, still has a really big leg. He's going to miss occasional field goals, but he'll be able to give you 57 yards of range, and not a lot of guys can say that. So feel pretty good about kicker. Will Hart returns at punter after a little bit of a drop-off last year.
Yeah, he was pretty erratic.
Yeah, I mean, he was an incredibly good surprise as a sophomore because he was Ray Guy level after being, you know, a 34 yards an attempt guy as a freshman, and then he kind of bounced back and forth last year, alternating the kind of kicks that he really impressed with as a sophomore with some shorter efforts, but, you know...
So the Mathlete and I came up with a new punting stat this offseason called Slap.
Very Big Ten.
Starting location after punt. Okay?
Okay.
And so it's basically just the average starting location after a punt from inside your own 50. We ran it, and it was 13.3 for Will Hart and 13.6 for Brad Robbins. The national average is like 2 yards beyond that. So both of our punters are actually like... in this made-up stat that we came up with, at least doing a very good job of anything inside the 50 ends up close to the 10.
Well, I like the FEI special teams ratings because they're about yardage gained and lost in various situations. Michigan was second overall last year for their entire special teams, and their punting was 24th. So not quite as good as the year before, but still quality, and you return your starter. I don't think you're going to see a drop-off here. And that's taking into the account that Michigan is not using the spread punt. So that includes returns.
Yeah, and we have numbers on that too. 47% of Will Hart's punts were resulted in a return, which is way, way higher than the national average.
Yeah, it's not good, but we know why Michigan does that, right? Because
we've seen the other side of
it. Yeah.
Right, they've downloaded the spread punt. They had Kalik Hudson take balls off guys' feet for four straight years. And that's, you know, if we're talking about that unit, you know, that's going to be something that you're going to look for a replacement. Could that be Dax Hill? I think that would be a pretty good
shout. That'd be a fun use of him. I
wanted to see Nico Collins try it in that kind of Marquise Walker role, but
oh man!
Didn't William Mohan like block a bunch of punts in high school?
I don't recall that coming up in his.
Blocking a high school punt is so contingent on the guy snapping it and the guy punting it that we should not pay attention to it at all.
Yeah, remember the Delaware State game? That's all.
Right.
What's going on in high school?
I've been to way too many high school games in a scouting capacity to think about punt blocks.
So replacing, getting a, like your designated punt blocker, I think will be an important role. And then
Roman Wilson, just speed, baby.
You got to have like a little bit of oomph for when you meet the
momentum is a lot of it's just speed.
Yeah. So the other guys who are going to be important on special teams are the returners. You have Giles Jackson back after being the number 10 kick returner in the country last year with the touchdown against Maryland. The almost touchdown against, not almost touchdown against Indiana.
I was going to say.
And he ripped off big returns against Alabama. He was a constant threat all year. I think he's going to continue in that role. They're talking about Ronnie Bell returning punts, which is
kind of sounds like the safe option.
Yeah, except early last year when Peoples Jones was out, they had Bell returning punts, and it wasn't safe. So if you remember, Donovan Peoples-Jones, early in his punt return career, made a series of decisions that had people asking for him to be benched. And Ronnie Bell kind of went through that his first couple games as a returner. So it's going to be interesting. I would just put Jackson back there. I just, given what he's been able to do on kickoffs and the fact that Ronnie Bell's a really important player for you on offense who's not replaceable because Michigan doesn't have any veteran backup outside wide receivers,
it's about decision making, right? So you have to teach that guy, you know.
Yeah.
And so I mean, you should be able to find one of them. You know, if it's not him, it's Sam Ristill. If it's not Sam Ristill, it's AJ Henning, right? Like you have a lot of those dudes to try.
Yeah, and I just feel like you have a number of really appealing punt return options that aren't your number one receiver in a situation where your number one receiver really needs to stay healthy insofar as it can.
And also in a year where you can literally take a freshman receiver or defensive back and use them solely as the returner and not use a year of eligibility on it.
Well, also you have Giles Jackson. Like Jackson projects as like a Steve Breston level punt returner. Just let him do it. Like unless he just can't catch the ball, but he was a punt returner in high school. Like you see the returns he had on his high school tape and it's like, all right, yeah, that guy can get it. So,
if you use the same guy inside the 50 as you do, you know, for long punts, right? Like, you can have Giles Jackson when there's a plausible return, and then, you know, Ronnie Bell if they're punting from their own 40.
One thing I should mention, the Football Outsiders has an opponent field goal ranking, which factors into your overall ranking, and Michigan was sixth in the country at forcing missed field goals, which is not a real thing.
Yeah, that feels fluky.
Yeah, but they've been consistently in the top 10 over the past 5 or 6 years in this metric. So that's long-term success. And, of course, Chris Partridge had a lot to do with that. But I think Jay Harbaugh, we mentioned this in a previous podcast, has been working with special teams for the duration of his career at Michigan. I think we're going to see a lot of continuity there. And hopefully they can find someone else to take the ball off the punter's foot.
Yeah, we were worried when Baxter left because Michigan all of a sudden was really good on special teams in 2015. And then immediately Partridge seemed to be like one of the best special teams coaches in the country. So as long as, you know, Harbaugh's been with Partridge that whole time.
Yeah, they blocked everything that year with Baxter.
Yeah.
It does feel like Baxter kind of left the cheat codes behind.
Yeah.
And Michigan's been working off of them. But as long as that sticks around, it still seems to be working. I mean, Jay Harbaugh has been a pretty competent coach by all appearances so far. So hopefully it just keeps rolling.
Yeah. And if defenses can't tackle, imagine what special teams are going to be doing when you try to get your hands on Giles Jackson. Not going to happen. It's going to be a crazy thing.
I will point out that Quinn Nordin is 4 for 9 of kicks beyond 50 yards. No one's ever had any number like that in Michigan history. Nine attempts beyond the 50, and he hits almost 50% of them.
Yeah, I mean, if he was just a little bit more consistent inside the 50 yards, then
yes, he's also missed 5 extra points in his career.
it's the yin and yang of
wild thing,
Quinn Nordin.
But, I mean, you have Jake Moody, who has never missed an extra point and is 6 for 6 inside the 30 and 8 for 10 inside the 40. Like, Jake Moody is a standard good kicker who, if you don't have Quinn Nordin, would be, you know, anybody would be happy to have that guy.
We haven't mentioned a significant special teams concern, which is that Cameron Cheeseman opted out.
Oh, my God, that's right.
Levers. Yeah. Oh, no levers.
He said he opted out and he was going to prepare, like, he's going to try to be a long snapper in the NFL. And I was like, this is the most Michigan thing that can happen, is that the long snapper opts out and then that's going to cost him a game. Like, it's going to cost him the Penn State game. That's a hot take.
So last year they actually had an extra long snapper. They had a grad transfer who came over just to get his Michigan degree and long snap for a year.
I didn't know that. Did you know that?
Because I'm a roster nerd. Like that. I remember when he came and I remember when he committed and then he was on the roster. And I download the rosters every year.
Well, I mean, teams like Michigan roll 3 or 4 deep in long snappers, so I don't think it's going to be a major issue.
And I think they got a new long snapper this year. I'm sure they wanted to. The original plan was to redshirt him and use Cheeseman again, but
hope he's got levers.
That's all we know about long snapping, is that levers exist.
It's crazy that we're referencing the ESPN scouting report on the long snapper.
The one good ESPN scouting report.
Well, no, back then they actually did scouting. Like, they were the guys who, like, picked out Metellus as a player. Like, they used to have these idiosyncratic scouts that I think were really useful. And now, like, you know, Michigan can get a 5-star and there's nothing. And this guy was...
Yeah, they just don't do it anymore.
They've gone from checking out the long snappers to not scouting Rashawn Gary in like 5 years. It's crazy.
Yeah, they are... I mean, ESPN, to give them credit, when they do scout something, they're pretty good at it. But the thing
but
is
they don't scout anybody anymore.
Well, they scout basketball and they scout women's basketball.
Well, that was...
They found their niche. And it's,
they did. I hope it's the same guys who are just like, oh, I'm so sick of football. What else can I scout?
Clearly
Michigan
fans. I really
like how we're ending this special team segment by talking about recruiting ranking.
All right. This podcast has come to an end.
Thank you for listening to the YemGo podcast. I'm Seth Fisher, along with Brian Cook and Ace Anbender. And if you really want to panic, tune into the next one, where we talk about the teams that Michigan has to play.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
Great!
You beat!
Pinkalicious is about a young girl who is an older sister who eats way too many cupcakes and turns pink and then red because of all the cupcakes she eats. After going to the doctor and being in trouble while the little brother gets to watch the whole time, she finally has to eat all sorts of vegetables to turn herself back to a normal color, at which point the boy reveals he has gotten into the cupcakes and turned himself pink, and nothing happens to him. So basically, the three-year-old son gets to eat cupcakes and watch his older sister get in trouble, which to my three-year-old makes it the greatest story ever told.